There's an important principle in Hilchos Kashrus we spoke a little bit about in the past, and it really comes up once again in Hilchos Tarovos, and that is the notion of Nosein Tam Lufgam. So just to backdown for a moment, we know that Nesinus Tam is a huge problem whenever you have a mixture, whenever you have a Tarovos. If I have, let's say, a big, big pot of potato soup and a little bit of churn for chicken soup falls in, so even though I have rove and I should have been okay, but if I can taste, the non-Jew can discern for me the taste of the chicken soup, that's going to pose a problem. According to many Rishonim, that's going to pose a problem on a level of deraisa. That's what we pass in Shulchan Aruch. The Nosim Tam is a real serious problem. Tam Kikra is a problem in HaTorah. Not everyone agrees it's been HaTorah, but everybody agrees it's a problem. The Mishnah, the Pharisee says it's a problem. Nevertheless, there's a machlokes that's annoying about the following. What if I have a big pot of potato soup cooking, a little bit of a tray for chicken soup falls in, but that tray for chicken soup doesn't taste good? Why doesn't that chicken soup taste good? For multiple reasons. Maybe it's spoiled. Or maybe there's nothing wrong with the chicken soup, but just the interaction between the ingredients in the soup doesn't taste very good. So I think probably a little bit of chicken falls to the taste, so probably doesn't ruin the taste. But certain other kinds of foods that they clash together, that there's nothing objectively wrong with anything, but just in the mixture the way they are, that doesn't taste very well. That's also considered to be a Nosein Tam Lufgam. Either one of those two cases, either when the food itself is spoiled or there's just the mixture just doesn't sit well with us, so that's a big machlekes at Tanoim. Is that permissible or not? Is that all of a sudden a matir, the fact that something is mentioned down this gam? So the Gemara says in the end of Masechet of the Zohar that this revolves around one basic principle about what is the meaning of this pasuk in Chumash and Parshas Re'eh. Lo sechuk on nevela, lo gerish b'sherech din aviyachol. Torah says not to eat nevela, not nevela, meaning an animal died without shechita. Don't eat it, but give it to the goyim. Give it to the goyim, etc. So give it to the goyim to eat. So some of the Tanoim say, ooh, the Torah says that don't eat it, but give it to the goyim. You see, from here, they were talking about something that people would like to eat, something that would be tasty, people put on the plate. If it's something that's a nice in time of God, it doesn't taste so good, no people wouldn't eat it anymore. So that's not the kind of Elish, Asra Torah. That's the, some Tanoim have that drush. Other Tanoim say, no, that's not what the pasuk means. So we pass in a law like that Mandiyam. We pass in a law for that Nosein Tam Lufgam is Mutter. That's going to set the stage for our entire discussion. So there is a famous observation of the Rashba in the sugya of Nosein Tam Lufgam, where the Rashba just asks a very, very simple question. He says, well, just give me a quantity, give me a way, how do I measure whether something is Nosein Tam Lufgam or not? How gab does it have to be? Does it have to be miserable, sickening, like I'm nauseous from looking at this food? Is that the definition of Nosein Tam Lufgam? But does Nosein Tam Lufgam mean it's a little off? You know, we've all had that. Experience. Eat something that doesn't. I wouldn't have prepared the food this way. It doesn't taste very good. So how far does something have to be in order to be labeled as a Nosein Tam Lufgam? So the Rashba says that we seem to have two different indications from Chazal, which are actually contradictory to one another. Says the Rashba, the original drasha of the Gemara, lo sechuk on avela, yeshem sharecha. So the Gemara speaks about an avela srucha, that's something that smells really bad, tastes really bad, something that mamash a person wouldn't eat. I have a steak in front of me, I would never eat this. If I would hand this over to the goy, throw it to the garbage. That's the imagery of avela she'en ruah l'ger. It says the Rashba, if that's the case, then the parallel halacha of Nosein Tam Lufgam has to be really, really bad. Not just something that's a little bit off, has to be something that's really miserable. So it says the Rashba, but that doesn't seem to be correct, because the Gemara, the end of Masechet Avodah Zarah, has a famous discussion about if I cook kosher food in a tray for pot, so what are the consequences of that food? So the psukim in Parshas Matos, that say that you're not allowed to cook in a tray for pot. The psukim say when they conquer Midian, so the Torah says they had a kasha in the pot. They had the legion, well, whatever different methods of kashering, go as Dover Shayam Ba'esh, Tavri Ba'esh, etc. All the different sugyas of kashering appear in the end of Sefer Bavidbar, Pashas Matos. So the Gemara has a big machlekes at Tanoi, the end of Sefer Bavidzara, just when were those pots used last? So one Tana says, well, it was 10 years ago, whatever, 6 months ago, whenever they were used last. So they still have bleas, they still have traces in them, and therefore you cook with them, that's going to trace up the food. And the other Tana says, no, this is just a nazir a couple of days ago, but the Torah only says that you're not allowed to cook with trefah pas within 24 hours of when they were used for trefahs. If they were used 6 weeks ago with a piece of chazir, so you can assume that it's okay. Why is it okay? Because that's a corollary to the rule of nevela she'en ruah l'ger. that since the dli is inside the walls of the pot, after 24 hours, they're going to start to deteriorate. They're going to start to taste pretty shvach. So, I don't mean shvach like shevach, I mean shvach like Yiddish. Like shvach, they don't taste good. So once it starts to taste a little less so good, that's what knows it's with God. And then after that, that's not a problem. So we have a major machlokes in the Tanoim, very little doubt from the Sechet of the Gezora, about just how to learn tight your kofi chumash. Torah says, you have to kasha kelim. What does that mean? So one side it says, you have to kasha all the pots, all the pans, all the silver, etc. And the other side says, you know, you just have to wait it out 24 hours. If you want to use it for a barbecue that night that you just conquered them from the goyim an hour ago, and they cooked the chazan 3 hours ago, then you have to kasha. You don't want to just wait it out for 24 hours. So we pass for a lot like the Mekilah. We pass in that La'oshatar, the Kader, but Yerba. That really, Minatar, you don't have to have a kasha thing. Minatar, you just have to wait 24 hours and you're good to go. With the Rabbanan, you have to kasha things because Gazul Gazer, the Gazul Gazer, the Kadera, She'er Ben Yom, Ata Ben Yom. So now we're afraid that if you let people start to use trade for pots after 24 hours, next thing you know, the guy's going to chisel away. I thought it was 24 hours, so 3.5 hours, 2 hours, 6 minutes, whatever, it's going to start to be Mazalzel. And therefore, with the Rabbanan, they made a Gazer across the board. Today, Gazer, Kadera, She'er Ben Yom, Ata Ben Yom. This perhaps is one of the oldest gezeiros on the books. There are some who say this is Moshe Rabbeinu's gezeiros. It's a strange thing. There are some Rishonim who say that we don't even have this gezeiros. There are some Rishonim who didn't have that last line in the Gemara by the Zohar. So the one gezeiros of the Gemara didn't even have that last line. So some Rishonim say that gezeiros doesn't exist, and others say it's gezeiros Moshe Rabbeinu. So a strange discrepancy in the significance of that gezeiros. But whoever made the gezeiros didn't make the bottom line. Shulchan Aruch, the gezeiros is recorded, and that's of course the way we run our kitchens today. If we wouldn't run our kitchens that way, it would be unbelievable. This would be like a falling. You just buy a pot from Goyim and drink a bit silver from Goyim. Everything's worth it. Just wait 24 hours. Everything's hunky dory. So we in the night we don't follow that. That's the Gzer der Rabbanan, also Kedera ben Yomo. So get back to the story. So the Gemara says that in the world of the Araisa, you have to 24 hours. You're good to go. Nothing could possibly be wrong. So the boy cooked chazer at 7:10 yesterday morning. Now 8:10 this morning, there's nothing wrong. I can use that pot, l'chadchila, min haTorah. Why? Because that's an expression of, that's an application of the principle of Nesin Tam of God being with them. So here's the Rashba, you give me a break. How pugav is that? If you went inside the walls of that pot and you extracted those bleas, how bad do you think they would taste? You think they would be miserable? You think they would be spoiled and rotten to the core? 24 hours have passed. It's not they haven't been sitting inside the walls of the pot for 20 years. 24 hours and 1 second have passed, and everything's good to go. Nothing down the ground, nothing's shown, everything's good to go. Some Rishonim would say, you don't have to eat 24 hours. Rashi holds, you just need to leave the slayla. Just has to pass over the night. So I cook there at 8 o'clock at night, and then the next morning, 6 in the morning, sure everything's good to go. So the Rashi, it's a joke. Some Rishonim like Thomas. Of course it doesn't taste miserable. So what does it mean, Nesh and Tam of Gam? The Rashi doesn't stumble, it means as follows, that it's already starting to turn a little bit. It's already starting to be a little sashvach. It's a little starting to deteriorate. So the stoma, that deteriorating flavor that's coming out of the pot after 24 hours, is not improving the food. It's probably knocking the food down a little bit. Says the Rashi, if you have two pots of food, so one you cooked with bleas of 24 hours, and one you cooked with bleas of 22 hours, so there's going to be a very, very small difference in terms of the actual taste of the food. It's not going to be rotten after 24 hours in 1 second. It's not going to be miserable. It's not going to be a rancid piece of meat. So says the Rashi, so why is that called a stomach scratch? So how did the Gemara label that as Nosh Tam of Gam? If the whole original model of Nosh Tam of Gam was something that was rotten through and through to the core, who's the Gemara kidding by telling us that after 24 hours you've reached that shear? So says the Rashi, obviously from that Gemara you see that you don't have to reach that shear. That Nosh Tam of Gam doesn't mean it has to be rotten through and through. Nosh Tam of Gam means it's a little bit shvach, it's a little bit bad, it's a little bit minuscule amount of not so good. It's already turning the taste a little bit. It's already Nosh Tam of Gam. How can that be? So make up your mind. What is the definition of Gam? Spagam means something that's miserable through and through. Spagam means something that's just a little bit off. So says the Rashi, Sabriskavort, the Rashi and the Teresavais, two halachas, the two dinim of Gam. Says the Rashi, it all depends on the following. If you're dealing with a davar shebe'en, you're dealing with a piece of meat proper, so the only way for that piece of meat to become mutter, not because it tastes a little bit off, that's not going to make it mutter. It's got to be rotten through and through. Let's say the Moshe has a piece of chazer, and I cooked it a couple of days ago, it's been sitting in the fridge, doesn't say it tastes so great. I never tasted leftover chazer, but I imagine it's probably not that much different than leftover chulens. So you know, after a couple of days, like it's probably not so great anymore. So says the Rashi, would you say, oh, it doesn't taste so good, first of all, everything's butter. And new cooler, you can go you go to Burger King, go to McDonald's, just ask for yesterday's cheeseburger. Everything is okay as long as it's the day old. So Rashi said, that's the way it's done. He said, in order to, for a davar should be end, to reach the point of being nice and namaskam, it has to be togum legam and legam. It's got to be some miserable mamash through and through. But in order for something to not to create an issa b'taharoves, that's a whole different ballgame. Let's not forget that really, really, in the Torah, everything should have been built on the road. That was the starting point of all of kashrus. Everything is achirat mahatos, a little chaz that falls in potatoes. Everything should have been built on the road. There's a court, there's a chiddush Torah, cool, Tom Kikar. How do I know Tom Kikar? I got to learn from Bas Mechav, I got to learn from Gilead Nachman, I got to learn from Mishras, from Nazir, I got to learn the same sukkah in Nazir, and in Avodah Zarah, and in Sochim, and then the sukkah keeps on repeating itself. All the different drushes, so what's the mock of Tom Kikar? Says the Rashi, when you're talking about the chiddush of Tom Kikar, the Torah is only mechadish to us, this din of Tom Kikar, if it's a tam which is really, really good. If it's a tam that's a little bit off, it doesn't have the koach to create the iser in the Taroivis. So says the Rashi, the reason why there's a discrepancy with what constitutes, what quantifies as a pagam, is because we're talking about two different applications of chukashras. One case we're talking about eating a piece of meat, and one case we're talking about did the little drop of chicken soup that fell into the pot of potato soup, did it create an issue of Tom Kikar or not? It's a different aspect of the chukashra, legamri, different word. And therefore the shear is different. So when you're dealing with the davish at the end, the isra atzlo, then the shear is pogam legamre. When you're dealing with the potential creating a taroibes, so then the shear is even a pogam mash. That's the Rashba's famous shtibble there. So the Ra'ov, in his comments on the Rashba and the Vedic Abayas, so looks the Rashba straight in the eyes and says as follows. What you basically told me is that when you have a pot that was cooked more than 24 hours. 26 hours ago, the guy cooked his chaz in that pot. And I look inside the walls of that pot. If I was being done just on those bleas themselves, they haven't yet covered tarogos. They haven't mixed into kosher food yet. Just asher husham. Just answer one question. Kosher trif. That's all I want to know, says the rabbi. Right now, in the state that they are, in the inner pieces of this pot, they haven't interacted with other kosher food yet. They haven't created an Isra of Tav Kikar yet. Just Bashehu Sham are the kosher of the trace. So says the Ra'at of the Rashba, you must hold that they're trace. Because Kol Zman, they haven't interacted with other food, so we're not coming based on the second application of those Tav Gam. We're being Mishayer, we're evaluating based on the first application. The first application has got to be rotten through and through. Says the Ra'at, you yourself told me that after 24 hours, it's not Shayach, not the Tav Yomer, that it rots to the core after 24 hours. So you're telling me, says the Ra'at of the Rashba, that the drops of food, the bleed, the molecules inside the walls of the pot, the Asher Husham, not what's going to happen in a minute from now, but Asher Husham, a treif gomer. Now you're telling me that the minute that you put some potato soup into that pot, put it on the fire, and all the bleeds come shooting out, now it becomes mutter. I got it. I didn't tell you saying now becomes mutter. Why? Because it's more than 24 hours, and those bleeds that were off a little bit, the taste went off a little bit, those bleeds, when they interact with the potato soup, don't have enough kechus to them to create a time kicker. That's what you just said. So you basically just said is you took a dove that's trace, you mixed it with kosher potato soup, turned on the fire, and hocus pocus, you took a dove trace and you turned it into being a dove mutter. That's what you just did. So says there are, you were just in flagrant violation of 2 weeks ago Shia. You would just catch this one, you were just the vatel and isol lechatchila. You took the equivalent of taking a piece of chazir, because according to you, the Rashi, but that chazir is still also inside the walls of the pot, not problem with gamri. You took a piece of chazir and threw it into a pot of potato soup and counted to 60 and said, Baruch Mashishim and Shalom Israel. So that's a flagrant Torah violation of a Vatlin Islach Chazir. How can you dare sanction that? And the Torah sanctions that. The Torah says, okay. Because the Torah says that La'osra Torah Kedar Bas Yoga. The Torah says, Tembalay, you must have said, Vedazok, Tembalay, that in a Torah, you could take a pot that was used last week by Avloy with Chamzer and cook potato soup in it. There's nothing wrong with the rice. We're doing that. La'osra Torah Kedar Bas Yoga. If he asked Bashar Beinu, he would permit that in his kitchen 100%. L'chat Chiva, unless he made the Gezer. But L'chat Chiva, in a Torah, you're allowed to do that. So that's the Ra'os challenge to the Rashba. How are you matir the Yisra of Ein Vatnus L'chat Chiva? So what's the Rashba's response? And Baruch Hashem, we know the Rashba's response because he wrote the Mishmaras Habayis to respond back to the Ra. So the Rashba starts out by saying, who said there's a Torah prohibition of Eim Avam? That was 2 weeks ago. That was 2 weeks ago, the Shirim. So we know that's a huge Maslaikis of Rishonim. Is there anything wrong, per se, with being Mevatel Eslech Etchila on the level of Deraisa? Remember we said there's a Mishnah, Masechet Trumas, there's a Sugi Masechet Gittin, a Sugi Masechet Beit, and there are Gemaras throughout Shas to talk about this absolute prohibition. You cannot lemaisa take a piece of chaz and throw it to a pot of potential. Lechatchila not allowed to do that, but it's unclear whether that, what's wrong with that is a problem in the Torah, or what's wrong with that is a problem with the Rabbanim. So the Rashba turns around to the Rosh and says, "How can we chanik with the walls of the pot?" He says, "With the Raisi, you're not doing anything. With the Raisi, you can put chaz and mamash into the pot." So what are you telling your story that? No, that's a violation. That's the first critique that the Rashba has to the Rosh. And then the Rashba. So it's the second response back to the Ra'ah. The Rashi writes in Shmos Abayis that even if you hold that aim about the Isla Chetchila is a problem to Ra'ah, even if you hold that that's true, here you're not trying to be Mabatul the Isla Chetchila. Here you're trying to cook your potato soup. Because my goal is to Hasel Mutter. I want to save my potato soup. I want to cook my potato soup. That's not really called a mevatelus lechetchila. That's a loaded question. We spoke a little bit about this a few weeks ago. How much kavana does or doesn't play a role in terms of the isser of a mevatelus lechetchila? That's a tricky line of the Rashba. But whatever the Rashba meant, it didn't mean with that response. There are the bottom line is the Rashba sticks to his guns that when we're mishar nois adam l'gam, so in the realm of tarobes, then we can be mishar with a lower standard of pagam. When we're dealing with something which is mamash ramash trace itself, and I want to eat the trace thing itself, so then we need the higher level. But lemaisa, when all the dust settles, everybody agrees, maybe short of some tarav with this group, but everyone agrees to halacha that the basic din of nosa dam of gam is permissible, and that is the source why, if I have a piece of, let's say, chazir, and the chazir really, really tastes bad, I mean, really, it's miserable, nobody would ever, you hold your nose, you try to eat that piece of meat, so minatari you're allowed to eat that piece of meat. That's the din of nosa dam of gam is actually mutter. There is a big machlokes that we showed him. When we say that nosin talmud gam is mutter midaraisa, what about midarabbanan? Was there ever an issur derabbanan that was tacked onto it? Is there anything wrong with lemaisa? I have a piece of chazir and it's been sitting out in the sun for 3 days. It's rotten through and through to the core. I want to eat it. I like this tasting chaz. It tastes miserable. I still want to eat it. Is there anything wrong with that? With the rabbanon, the way said, it's after the hour, it doesn't exist. It's not treifus anymore. Is there any violation of that with the rabbanon? So there is a gemara in the beginning of the second parashah of the Masechet Pesachim, where the gemara speaks about charcha kedzmana. The person takes a piece of chametz and they basically burn the piece of chametz and make it miserable, reach the point of nifsa mechilas kelav. Nobody, no person would eat it, no dog would eat it. Mamish, it's miserable chametz. The Gemara says, if you destroyed the chametz to the point where it's so miserable tasting and did it before Pesach began, that's what there's not beer in the morning, so then mutabano, so then you're permitted to derive benefit from that. You don't have to get rid of it anymore. It's nifsa mechilas kelav, you're allowed to use it, and it's mutabano. That's a very shimon mutabano. So the Rishonim have a big machlokes about that phrase in the Gemara, mutabano. Why do they want to say mutabano? Why do they want to say mutabiachila? So some Rishonim say, because normal people aren't eating, that's the whole point. It tastes so miserable, a normal person would eat it. That's why Chazal didn't say mutabiachila. If you want to be mishugan and eat again, just make it, do whatever you want. It's not, it's nifsomiachila gamre. And other Rishonim say, no, the Chazal were very medayik in the lashon, because they said mutabano, because it's taka also biachila. Why is it also biachila? So the Rosh, in the beginning of the Sefer Pesachim, quotes a new concept called Achshavei. Achshavei means that I'm giving it significance. Objectively, it's rotten, spoiled through and through, but I'm giving it significance. To me, it's important. To me, it's choshev, and therefore, my being machshev, it poses a problem. How serious a problem does my being machshev pose? Is that a svar d'araisa? Is that a svar b'derabbanan? The fact that I'm going ahead and eating it? So the Taz in Hilchos Yom Kippurim has a riot from the Mishnah, Maseches Yuma, where the Mishnah speaks about on Yom Kippur, if a person eats miserable tasting food on Yom Kippur, so the Mishnah says that he's popular. So the Taz says, what do you mean? Achshavei. Maybe this is d'araisa. He says, no, come on, can't be d'araisa. There's no way for achshavei, the svar of that rush to be d'araisa. At worst, and worst, the worst case scenario is a derabbanan. I'm not even sure that's right, but at worst it is a derabbanan. So that's a big machlokes and Rishonim. Is there such an issa derabbanan or not? This concept of taking a small piece of food and the chachilah sitting down and eating a small piece of food, is that a problem at all? Or do we say it's mutter min ha-Torah, mutter min ha-Rabbanan? Or do we say no, mutter min ha-Torah, but it's still prohibited min ha-Rabbanan because because of the Svarav Achshaveg. So in Shulchan Aruch we're machmer on this. We assume that this is a problem. That you're not supposed to, you're not lechatchila with Rabbi, you're not supposed to eat this raw food. Nevertheless, the Shulchan Aruch in Yerdei and Chalak Aleph quotes a psak from some earlier Rishon, I think it was a Heter, if I'm not mistaken. He quotes some earlier poskim who say that you're allowed to take a sheret, kind of a dead bug, a dead reptile, whatever it is, some kind of a dead thing, and sheret tsaruf, burn it up in ashes. And it was considered to be some kind of a medicine, some kind of a treatment for some illness. Again, I cannot tell you what the illness was, I cannot tell you whether it works or not, but I can tell you that that's what the Zeshta and Shulchan Aruch that we used to do. So the doctor said that a guy in certain conditions, he should take the sherets and burn it and eat the ash of the sherets, and then inshallah it's going to get better. So the Shulchan Aruch calls you allowed to do that. Also, you're allowed to take the sherets sorrow and you're allowed to eat it. So the Achareim, we're not sure what is that based on exactly. Why are you allowed to eat it? So some Achareim say the reason why you're allowed to eat it is as follows. Because midat Torah, it's mutter anyway, because once it's burnt up, it's crispy ready, once it's not real achil anymore, so then it's not going to be an issa deraisa, even though it will still be also midirabar, because it's achshavei. So this is one of those many, many isurim derabar that were lifted by makam chola. We know that Chazal sometimes were lenient and certain isurim derabar by makam choli. The general starting point is that in order to be matter an issa deraisa, you have to be chol sheyesh b'satana, and in order to be matter certain isurim derabar, and even chol she'ei b'satana suffices. Not all. We know that even in Nuch Shabbos, there are nuances of differences. The Gemara says explicitly that Amir Liachov is a very low level Issa Derabonim, because it doesn't involve a Jew doing an action, it's just words. So that's on the bottom and rung of Issa Derabonim. The Chazal lifted that Issa Derabonim from Mokom Chola She'en B'Sakon. That is going to do a Derabonim, to do even the Raisa for you from Mokom Chola. Then the Rishonim had a big machlokes. What about other Isurim Derabanan? Is that across the board? Or maybe there's a hierarchy, there are gradations within the world of Derabanan. So the Rishonim have a parallel discussion when it comes to Machlokes Asuras. If Chazal and Ma'at, there's certain Isurim of Machlokes Asuras, some certain Derabanan, but they master all, so it's also not 100% clear what they were, what they weren't master. So it could be some Achmarim, right? That's what's going on over here. That this Issa Derabanan of Ashur is a very, very low level Issa Derabanan, because objectively it's really permissible in the Torah. So Chazal listed this b'makom choli. So that's one approach. Then in the side of Yerdeya, so the Sefer Yad Avraham, the Acharonim suggests that there's a different part going on here. Maybe the reason why it's mutter, not because they lifted an Issa Derabanan b'makom choli, but maybe the Issa Derabanan literally doesn't apply b'makom choli for the following reason. That min haTorah, it's really mutter. Min haTorah, you're allowed to eat the food outright, because the taste is miserable, you're allowed to eat it. But the Rabbanon, you're not allowed to eat it because of Achshavei. But here, the whole Svar of Achshavei falls by the wayside. I don't really want it. What does Achshavei mean? Achshavei means that, oh, I really want this food. To me, this is very chashuv. To me, this is very significant. I think this food tastes great. I'm sure that it tastes miserable enough. To me, I really think it tastes great. You don't think it tastes great. You don't want to eat this burnt to the crisp ashes of a mouse. That was not exactly on your menu for breakfast. But the doctor told you, this is going to help you with your, get you over your cold. This is going to help you feel better by having this burnt sherets. So I don't really want to do it. I do, because the doctor told me. If the doctor prescribed me something kosher, I eat the kosher food. So therefore, some achareinim write that the whole svar of achshavei doesn't make any sense. The whole svar of achshavei is your machshavei liachila. Yeah, you're not machshavei liachila. So the main one's going to be muta. So you have a nuance of machshavei. Everyone agrees, says that you're allowed to eat it. So the question is, why you're allowed to eat it? You're allowed to eat it because it's also, it's an issur derabanan, it's an absolute issur derabanan. The Chazal lifted that issur derabanan to makom choli. But they say, no, that the chiyag avna, that I'm eating it on the doctor's orders, so that's not included in the whole svar. The whole issur derabanan of achshavei falls by the way. So my nafkamina. At the end of the day, it's mutter. It's probably a big nafkamina. How much doctor's orders do you need? How much of makom choli do you need? So we have in Issur Shabbos, not every sniffle is called the cholish ein b'sakana. There's the cholish yesh b'sakana, there's the cholish ein b'sakana, and that's what we call michush b'yalma. So michush b'yalma is kishmai kenyum. I mean, a little uncomfortable, a little headache, stomachache, allergies are acting up, those kinds of things. Those are called michush b'yalma. Michush b'yalma, there's no mafia to do isurim d'rabbanan. You're not allowed to ask a goy because you have an allergy problem. That's not a mafia. Sometimes you can have michush b'yalma that can become a cholish ein b'sakana. To be a cholish ein b'sakana, you're not going to be deathly ill. That's cholish yesh b'sakana. Cholish ein b'sakana, there are more defined as being nafal mishkan. You're sick enough, you have to lay in bed. Well, the Tosfos are very lenient in that category, but you have to be able, you're not functioning, you feel miserable, you feel like you have to lay down a little bit. Very often the women ask me this question, they say, yeah, I would love to lay down, except I got four kids at home under the age of five, and I can't lay down. So it could be your nafal mishka when you're feeling fine, it could be your nafal mishka, so whatever it is. So you have to like tailor make to figure out how exactly to define what's called nafal mishka. But everyone agrees that a little sneeze, a little backache, a little headache, that's not enough to sanction violating a certain rabbanim. Sometimes the Ruchu Shabbos, maybe that's called a little bit of a tzar, and then maybe it could be make a little bit of the rabbanim, so there are certain coolest possible for those cases too, sometimes. But to be a real bona fide chola, you have to be a little bit more than that. So if you go down the view of the first group of Acharonim, that the only reason why we're not here to eat the spoiled, burnt, crispy mouse is because you're a chola and you have a special heter, or the mat, the yisad, the rabbanim, akshavei for a chola, so then you have to figure out, am I really a chola? Yeah, it's not such a big chola. It just doesn't feel so great. It's not such a big chola, then we wouldn't be matir it. But if you go down the second route, the reason why it's mutter is because I don't really want to eat this food anyway. I'm taking it because the doctor recommended it. So the doctor recommended it, whether I'm a chola, whether I'm a michosh. I have a headache. So I want to partake of this particular spoiled food. I'm doing it on doctor's orders. So this would be a big mascavita. This is the big issue that comes up today in terms of medications. So there are a lot of medications that have potentially trace ingredients in them. Even within those medicines that have trace ingredients in them, so many of the medications taste miserable. So you have like a regular standard tablet, unless you have some flavored, kitty, something or other. Most tablets, the average Tylenol, if you chew it up and taste it, tastes pretty bad. So most of the medications, at least the tablet forms of medications that we have, taste miserable. When it comes to the liquid, it gets a little bit trickier. Some of the cough medicines, they treat them with stuff to make them taste good. So that becomes more problematic. If you have a miserable tasting cough medicine or a miserable tasting Tylenol, something like that. So do I have to even bother to see if it's a kosher now? Is that even necessary to spend time figuring out the kosher ingredients, not kosher ingredients? So it depends on the shayla. So if you go down the first route of Acharonim and say that just because it tastes terrible, that's not a matter. If there's real typhus in there, so that's a problem. Now, it may be a mutter if you're a chola shemis Acharonim, so you have to figure out, are you really a chola? So HVH, some people take Talmuds when they're not necessarily chola. They have a little headache, and they take the Talmuds. And that's not a chola shemis Acharonim. The guy has a little stomach ache, so he takes some medicine. The guy's got a little cough or something, so he takes some cough medicine, even bad tasting cough medicine. According to the first group of Toskim, you would have to check and make sure that there's no traces in there. According to the second group of Toskim, you got Ram and others who went along with the second idea, who said that it's not a problem as well. As long as you're not doing it because you want to do it, I would never ever decide to come up and say, oh gee, what's for supper tonight? Tylenol and cough medicine. So that's the way people act. Even the Mishugan don't talk like that. So that's not called Akshave. So I'm doing it because the doctor said so. So Mamela, that's not called Akshave. It's not called Akshave, that's Mutter Legamri. So yesh v'yesh. So many people are making on that. So this Shaila is not just a kasher shayla. This is a shayla that permeates other areas of halacha. First and foremost, Sukkot Pesach. This is the root of the entire issue about the potential of chametz and many medications. There are fundamentally two different approaches to Klal Yisrael to medicines on Pesach. So there's one approach that says that all medicines, that every medicine under the sun has to be evaluated for chametz in it. And if you can't figure out what the chametz is, then you're not allowed to take it. It doesn't matter what tastes good, what tastes bad, or you have to check every chametz. You have guides and guides and more guides and more guides and more lists and more lists and more lists and more lists about what the status of all the medications are, because we're searching for any, like Rav Nosef, searching for any mashur, any chashash, any chametz in any of them, so the game's over, even though it tastes miserable. That, unless it's the Mavish Kukuch Mefesh. So that's one approach to medicine on Pesach. The other approach to medicine on Pesach is that it's one simple question. Does it taste good? Does it taste bad? If it tastes bad, so then it's put there anyway. So if it tastes good, then we'll evaluate whether it has chametz in it. So that's going to make your list significantly smaller. So you go down the second route, so then, again, some medicines that you have to look into. So again, some of the cough medicine, some of the flavor medicine, the kidney medicine, some of that you have to look into. It could be most of it's not going to have any chametz anyway. That's going to be a different story, but at least you have to evaluate, you have to experiment. Mashiach, if you go down the first route, so then you have to look at anything and everything, even the stuff that tastes miserable. We generally, in our community, I think we generally follow the second view of the Tosfos. I think that's the view taken by many of the big hashkachas that we usually rely on for other things, is that we have a right to be maker like that, that as long as the medicine is bad taste. And that's why you'll see in certain Pesach books that will come out, to say something like this, that any, all tablets, you know, with the exception of maybe some of the flavored kiddie stuff, all tablets are basically mutter because they all taste miserable anyway. And then any other bad tasting medicines are going to be mutter. And then with the good tasting medicines, here's your list, 99% of them anyway come true. So whatever, you have to make your judgment. This issue about what's our take on these bad tasting foods, both in terms of kashrus and in terms of Pesach, also spills over to Yom Kippur, because the Mishnah speaks about concerning Yom Kippur. The Mishnah in the end of Maseches Yuma talks about eating on Yom Kippur, eating very bad tasting foods. So the Mishnah says, if you take miserable tasting food on Yom Kippur, so you're allowed to do that. I mean, at least not you're allowed to do that. A person eats terrible tasting food on Yom Kippur, is potter. So the same achloikis we have in Uchus Kashrus, and the same achloikis we have in Uchus Chometz spills off at Yom Kippur as well. Does that mean it's mutter legamrei? The Mishnah says potter. So potter means mamash and mutter. So that's the big achloikis. Some Rishonim say, of course, potter means potter v'losor, don't we know that? In Uchus Shabbos, that's the rule. Kol p'tuah d'Shabbos, potter v'losor. Whenever Chazal say the word potter in Uchus Shabbos, there's three exceptions. So the Gemara says at the beginning of Tzad HaShabbos, it always means potter v'losor with the Rabbanan. Some Rishonim say, oh, so when the Mishnah says you're not allowed to eat bad-tasting foods on Yom Kippur, when the Mishnah says you're potter from eating bad-tasting food on Yom Kippur, that means potter v'al also with the Rabbanan. And other Rishonim say there's no such klal that potter means potter v'al also. That's in Uchus Shabbos, because Yom Kippur is a different area of halacha. There's no klal gadol in the language of Chazal that potter means potter v'al also. So it's the same achlokes, the same rosh in Maseches Pesachim, and the same achlokes in Uchus Chometz, and the same pizman in Uchus Yom Kippur. It's all the same fundamental question. Is there an issa de Rabbanan of Achshavei? So we pass in all three areas, yes. But according to the Mekilim, if you're doing it for medicinal purposes, and doctor's orders, or quasi-doctor's orders, so then that's going to be permissible, even the Chachila. Yom Kippur gets a little bit more complicated, not because of the time Shabbat, because of the Yisrael Malacha Shabbat. People tend to forget that in addition to not eating Yom Kippur, there's an Yisrael Malacha Yom Kippur. And one of the Dinim Derabbanan of the Yisrael Malacha is not allowed to take medicine on Shabbos and Yom Kippur, Yom Kippur not being any less than regular Shabbos and Yom Kippur. So therefore, you can only take a medicine in Yom Kippur. You have to clear two hurdles. First of all, you have to clear the Isra Achila part. So again, if it's a bad tasting medicine, that'll be okay. But you have to also be justified in taking the medicine because of Hilchos Shabbos and Yom Kippur. So you guys, a little headache in Yom Kippur. If you had a little headache on Shabbos and Yom Kippur, you couldn't take that Talmud. So you can't take it in Yom Kippur. If you have a big headache, so it depends how big your headache is. So if your headache is enough to knock you out, you can't come to Lusav anymore. You're knocked out, you're laying in bed. So that's called enough for a mishkav. Enough for a mishkav, then you're allowed to take medicine. You have a very, very common shayla on the Yom Kippur. A person knows themselves. They know that they're prone to certain migraines, and they know that if they don't take the medicine now, before they reach the point, so they're never going to make that. They're never going to make it to shul for later in the day. So is that called enough for the mishkav or not? So that's a prevention enough for the mishkav. I think there's a phrase in medicine, something along the lines of an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, something like that. So the halacha accepts that idea also to an extent. So there is a psach of the Maharam of Rutenberg, where the Maharam of Rutenberg says that if it's very cold Friday night in your house, you're allowed to ask a goy to go take some logs and put the logs into the fire, because hakol cholam makes otzina. It says in Maharam of Rutenberg, people tend to get sick when it's cold. Now, I'm well aware of the fact that our medical professionals will tell us that you don't catch a cold, unlike what your grandmother may have told you. There's no such thing as catching a cold from the cold. So that there is no such a concept in medicine. However, my experts have told me that although it's true that you get sick from germs, not from the cold, nevertheless, there is medical evaluation that we know it to be true that people tend to get sicker in the wintertime. So there is a reason for that. So part of the reason is that when it's colder, so apparently, like some of the allergists here will fill you in on it after another point. I'll explain to you that apparently when it's colder, so that will impact sometimes on the lining of the mucuses and your nose and my stuff, and the ability, it's basically this part of the body that protects you from all the germs. So in the cold, it may not be working as well. And some of the stuff that would otherwise perhaps be blocked is not being blocked as well. So you do get sick from catching cold, but not because you caught the cold. The cold was the geirin. The geirin, the cold was geirin, your body's inability to perhaps not be able to fight off the germs as well. So there may be some truth to what your great-grandmother told you, that you do catch, if you go outside, you're going to catch pneumonia. That kind of a phraseology has, it's not exactly a direct link, but there is a little bit of a, you know, a derech rama, a little bit of maybe truth to that. So that's what my rooms are saying. Also, if you can have everybody sitting around in a freezing cold in the house on Friday night, so people are going to perhaps get sick. So my Rutherford said that that's called the kochol mitzvah, and we can be able to do certain derabbanan, really, yeah, things of that nature as preventative care. So that idea exists in other areas, other applications as well. A guy is feeling fine. It's 9 o'clock in the morning. I didn't care, but he knows his body. He knows that this, unless he does such and such, this migraine, you know, whack him out at this 3 hours from now. So if he knows that he takes X beforehand, so then that's probably okay. That's preventative to prevent him from becoming a cholish and b'sakana. That would also be justified. So again, anytime you take any medicine in Yom Kippur, you have to answer two questions. Is this a violation of eating? Is this a violation of malacha? Is it a derabbanan of taking medicine? So the achila part, once again, if it's a good tasting medicine, that's the problem. It can take, I remember when I was a little kid, I don't think this thing exists anymore. Who remembers Aspergum? You remember this? You remember Aspergum? Okay, so remember, so that's the school for Aspergum, for the young people there was. It was a mammoth piece of gum that had it was like coated with baby aspirin. And because all the baby, the little kids didn't want to take the little St. Joseph's orange 16 of those pills to make up the aspirin. So they would give you a slice of gum, and you would chew on the gum, and the mice of the aspirin was on the gum, and it was all coated with all kind of chatterai, etc. So it could be a trace. We lived in a world where it's a different kind of mentality. Like, everything was kosher, food and trace kind of like mentality. Like somehow we assumed that was okay. I remember absolutely certain, true that Aspergum, no headache, I garnished. I just remember I told my mother, oh, I don't feel well, and I got myself Aspergum. It was really good. It was candy. My lunch, it was the candy. So if you have that in your kippah, that's a problem. That's like having a candy in your kippah. But if you take a miserable tasting Tylenol because you have a strong headache and you can't make it to Musaf, so then probably Yesh Tohokol, Henvitam, this is the Rabbanim part of medicine, and the Henvitam, the Yeshiva part.